We're going to be talking about self-worth and versus self-image to begin with. Self-image has been defined as a feeling of importance about myself. If there's not too large a difference between the realistic self-appraisal and your ideal self, then you feel pretty good about yourself. But there's usually a gap. You know, here's my real self. And here's what I expect of myself and what other people may expect of myself. And there's, I don't know about you, but I've got this gap in there. And those two really don't meet. And we want to talk today about how Jesus can help us bridge the gap between the real self and the ideal self. Self-worth is to have our very existence stable in the fact that Jesus Christ is and that his worth is in me. So for the Christian, it's a little bit different. It's believing the word and what Jesus says about me and living by it. It's not just how I see myself. It's how Jesus sees me. We do a lot of things as people to try to make ourselves feel good about ourselves. We might be all wrapped up in how we look or the kind of house we have, or do we have a good ministry? Do we... Or it might just be safety. There's always the person who doesn't want to come out of the corner. Sometimes I would like to be in the corner. It's safe and it's comfortable there. And I feel secure there. But it's not where the Lord wants me to be. He wants me to be growing and doing other things. So it's not wrong to look nice. It's not wrong to be wealthy and have things. But if we're all wrapped up in that and it takes the place of the Lord, then we get our security and significance in Jesus all mixed up. We can suffer from low self-esteem and still have a high self-worth in Jesus Christ, because our self-esteem is so much based on how I see myself and how I feel about myself, and we want to have our self-worth in Jesus. Now I want you to take your pencils and draw a circle in the middle of that paper that we divided into four parts. And in the middle, let's put a P for personal. And you can put a little S and S in there too. That stands for security and significance. We were created in the image of God and we are like Him. And that P stands for personal, meaning that I'm a spiritual being and that we long for loving, meaningful relationships. We have deep longings. That's another way of saying security and significance. Can you think of something in your life that you really, really want? We would call that, you really want, we call that a deep longing. You might want your husband to be different, or a child. Yeah, I can identify with that one. I lose weight.
I mean, I pray about it and I fall off the wagon.
Okay, lose weight. Okay. You look wonderful to me. No, you don't think so.
Right. So you really yourself have to feel that you're
right.
All right.
That's right. So right, and so this means security and significance. And we want our security and significance to be in Jesus, don't we? Mm-hmm. But we tend to get this middle circle. We can fill it up with other things. And we'll feel good about ourselves, but it's not in the right place when it's not in Jesus. Does that make sense? We want Jesus to be filled, to fill up this circle with His Word and with His Spirit and the time that we spend with Him. This will make more sense as we go along, Carl. Can you write down on your paper something that you would really want, like you're talking about losing weight? For me, a couple years ago, I thought I wanted a new house. Just wanted a new house so badly. So I'm going to put on my paper house, okay?
Doesn't matter where.
Just scribble a little note for yourself. House. Doesn't have to be a thing. You might want to see a change in a person or... So this middle circle, do you understand what it is? It's security and significance in Jesus. Where's my... Let's define security. It's a convinced awareness that I am unconditionally loved. That's what security is. That's what I mean when I talk about security. That I don't have to change to be loved. Jesus loves me. in the way I am. Significance is that I am personally adequate to do a job for eternity. Jesus has given me all the power or the gifts that I need to do what he asks me to do, and that I can have a meaningful impact on another person and help them in their life. That's what significance is when I put S and S in that middle circle. Have you all written down a longing? Something that you want? Got a little note. Okay. And we're going to draw another circle around this one now. If you might want to put your notes about one circle out in this spot, for example. Then we'll draw another circle and maybe put the notes about that circle out here, okay? So you kind of don't get too confused on your paper. Like we could put security and significance out here, and that we were created in the image of God. Because by the time we get through, you'll wonder what I'm doing. Okay, we're going to draw another circle, and let's put the notes about this one out here. This is our rational circle, or our thinking circle. Proverbs 22:15 says that we're all foolish. My children are foolish, and I'm foolish, and that we don't think the way God thinks. We don't always think according to his word. We are foolish beings. And there are two major areas that we make mistakes in our thinking. Number one is that we'll often think that an answer to my problems depends on a change in my circumstances. And what's wrong with that is it's saying that God really isn't sovereign, that he hasn't planned this day for me and he doesn't have lessons for me. I'm a victim. And I'm not a victim because God is sovereign in my life. And the second thing that we tend to think is that it depends on a change in my feelings. We are so prone to live by how we feel rather than by right thinking and right choices. For example, if I didn't feel so depressed today, I would go over and visit my friend who's in the hospital. But, you know, I just don't feel like it. Just can't do it today. Or if my appetite weren't so ravenous, you know, I would weigh 20 pounds less. That's mine too. I'm always fighting it. Always. And David, King David, in Psalm 13 and Psalm 43, he was in the midst of battle. He had men pursuing him for his life. And he was feeling depressed. He was not thinking the way God probably would have him think. But he chose to rejoice. He said, I will rejoice and I will praise the Lord. And so he had to live above his feelings and make those choices as to how he would respond to the Lord. So let's make an application off of this thinking circle. You know, our minds are kind of like a tape recorder, and you have to change sometimes how you think. I once put a little 3x5 card on my refrigerator, and I had my wrong thinking on one side. Thought that I wanted a new house. And I think what I was thinking was that it would make me feel like a more important person if I had that new house. Well, that's not right, is it? And it wasn't a conscious thing that I was thinking, but I just wanted that new house so bad. So I turned the card over, and on the other side I wrote that I am secure and significant in Jesus Christ. And it doesn't matter if I live in a tent or what I live in. It doesn't make me any more important or any more worthwhile. And sometimes, you know, you don't realize your thinking patterns and what goes on. So as you think about your deep longings, can you think of some wrong thinking that might go along with something that you've really wanted? Does it cause you to think unscripturally? It may be not. For me, it was the house. And I was thinking that I would be more secure and significant in a new house. Isn't that foolish? How foolish I am. Okay. Foolish thinkers might say this. Why did this happen to me? Have you ever said that to yourself? Me too. He had no right to do that to me. I know this is wrong, but it feels so right. That's what the world says, isn't it? If it feels good, do it. That's not what God says. God says, here are the facts. Here's my word. I want you to live by them. Live by faith. and then I will give you the positive feelings. So with God, it's fact, faith, and feelings. With the world, it's feelings first. And then they go on from there, and they've got it backwards. It doesn't work. Or you might think, I just can't handle this today. And when I say that, what I'm really saying is, I won't handle this today. If God brings it into my life, I can handle it. But when I say that, I'm saying, no, Lord, I won't. So I shouldn't say that. Okay, one more circle, or two more circles. This is the third one. This one is your volitional circle, or your choice circle, where you make your choices. You can write notes down here if you want. We all make choices every day. Excuse me for turning around backwards. Everything that we do is a choice. You say, well, I have to pay my taxes. Well, you don't really have to pay the taxes. You could pay the consequences for not paying your taxes. Or the mother might say, I have to get up and get the children off to school and feed them breakfast. And she really doesn't have to. She could stay in bed. The children would probably survive. And everything that we do is a choice. Sometimes it's not conscious because we have habits and we just kind of get into our rut and, you know, we aren't jilted out of it. But everything we do has a consequence, every choice that we make. Let's talk about the difference between a goal and a desire. It's just another way of saying, you know, we say, let's keep it committed to the Lord. If you have a goal is something that you want, but you cannot control the outcome of it. A lot of this stuff is on your handout, you know, so don't worry about taking real great notes. A desire is something that you want, but you can't control the outcome. It's in your, it's right in there. You don't need it now. It's okay, but it's most of the stuff is in there. So let's talk about a marriage goal. What might a goal might be in your marriage? My goal might be that Larry and I would both continue to grow in closeness in our walks with the Lord. Now, should that be a goal or should it be a desire? Can I control the outcome of that? I can't with Larry.
Oh, he's not a Christian.
Yes, but he might decide, hey, I don't want to be a Christian anymore.
Might
decide, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a desire for my marriage, something that I could pray for. But a better goal would be that I would be a godly woman, a godly wife and mother, because nobody can block that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my choice, and that's between the Lord and myself. And it's just another way of saying keep it committed, but it helps us to keep our goals and desires straight. Then we don't get
desire, really, if you do it for the both of you.
Yes, because you can't control.
But a goal, it's me.
Yeah, you can't control what the other person does, but it's a goal if it's just for you. We had a girl lived in our home, and she was working in a jewelry warehouse. We were talking about her goals and objectives for the year, and one of her goals was that she wanted to lead 3 people to the Lord at work that year. Is that a good goal? Can she control the outcome of that?
No, I don't think that's
right. A better...
It's a good goal, but it's not possible.
Yeah, it should have been a desire. Because her goal might have been to share the gospel with 3 people. But she can't do that. That's up to the Lord and the Holy Spirit. And she was frustrated. She couldn't figure out what was wrong and why nothing was happening. And it was helpful to her to get her goal and desire, get her goals and desires straightened out. If you have a blocked goal, you will feel angry. I don't know if that's written down. I don't think that's written down in your notes. You know, say I had just scrubbed the kitchen floor and my little boy came in with mud all over his shoes and messed up the floor, I would probably feel angry because my subconscious goal is to have a clean floor. I just spent an hour cleaning it. And so it's a natural feeling to feel that way. You don't want to live in anger. You want to deal with it. But it's helped me to understand how I feel and what my goals are. If you have an uncertain goal, you will feel worried because you're just not quite sure where you're headed and what the Lord wants you to do. If you have an unattainable goal, your goals are too high, you'll feel guilty. Probably have a low self-image because your goals are so high you can't possibly reach them. I took my, I guess he was about 5 when we went miniature golfing one night with my Christopher. And I don't know, we'd gotten through 4 or 5 holes, and he was just furiously angry. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. He was glaring at me. He was saying nasty things. He was just absolutely unbearable. And he's hyperactive and a very intense little guy. And I couldn't figure out what was happening. I said, Lord, what in the world is wrong with this child? We're out playing miniature golf. We ought to be having a good time. And I started thinking about this. And Christopher's goal was to hit a hole in one on every hole that he hit. Yes. And I watched him and I figured out that's what's the matter. He's angry at himself because his goals are so high that he couldn't possibly attain it. And he was a little 5-year-old wreck. He was just horrible. So I took him aside and talked to him and explained to him that the goal was to have fun and that nobody expected him to get a hole in one. And so now we go do something like that. He's 14. And he will look at me and he'll say, now the objective is to have fun, right, Mom? I say, that's right. You don't have to be the star. It's okay. But, oh, it was hard figuring out what was wrong with him. He was miserable. So it's helped me with my kids and lots of, you know, other people too, but it's been helpful. When we had 4 girls living with us, my objective on Saturday morning was to get the house cleaned. Because, you know, big house and big and busy schedule and all. And at the end of Saturdays, I noticed that I was just frustrated. And I'd go to bed angry and, you know, mad at some of the people that were living in the house. Because my goal was to get the house cleaned. It should have been a desire. But I had made it a goal, and so I would go to bed angry. And when I changed my goal on Saturday was to be my attitude to glorify God and to minister to the people that were living in our home with us, then I could go to bed Saturday night happy because I changed my goal to a desire and gotten that straightened out.
It was such a big problem for so many years. And I wonder, why don't we do that? Why do we put ourselves through that sort of thing?
Well, I think the reason I had trouble with the house was just pressure from people. I just felt like I needed to have an immaculate house. And the house was more important to me than the people. Just plain and simple. I had things mixed up.
What I'm saying is, and this is not to display ignorance, but we should have better judgment than to set it so high that we couldn't reach it. Mm-hmm. And we continue to feel bad all the time. And mm-hmm. I don't know why it took me years to learn that.
I don't know why it took me years either. It did. I'm still learning. You've probably learned it, dear. I am not sure I've even learned it.
Well, no, not always, but I have, especially about my home, one reason was because Mother always did everything in the home in one day. It had to be done that day. Mm. And nobody told me I had to, but I just felt like I must get everything done in one day as far as my polishing the home. But I really didn't.
Well, that's just because you grew up that way.
Many nights feeling disappointed in myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then after the light dawned, I thought, oh, you don't.
Well, and probably it was unattainable, you know.
No.
Yeah, I felt guilty, and why can't I perform? And that's a performance thing. The same thing with me. And I had a lot of pride, I think, wrapped up in my home, you know, and a lot of my personal worth in here I was getting from my house and how it looked and not from Jesus, because I like for my house to be clean and I like for it to be attractive and a place where people, you know, not immaculate, but a place where people like to come and feel comfortable. And so I just had things mixed up. Jesus really wasn't my security and significance. My house was too important. So I'm still learning. Thanks. That's a good illustration. Another desire of mine that I used to get mixed up is I desire to be encouraged. You know, I would like for people to be an encouragement to me, but I can't control that. So I can't make it a goal. I remember one conference we went to at the Glen, and Chuck Swindoll was the speaker, and oh, I was so excited. I wanted to go to that conference to hear Chuck Swindoll so bad. And so we went, and he gave one message, and he went home with the flu. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I was so disappointed. And, you know, and I couldn't control that, and I was angry. I thought, Lord, I was, you know, looking so forward to that. But it should have been a desire, and I didn't have it committed. And I realized, you know, I went to the conference for the wrong reason. I went to hear Chuck Swindoll, and I should have gone for whatever reason the Lord had me there and what he had for me. So I can't desire to be encouraged. I can have a goal to be an encourager, but I can't have a goal to be encouraged because other people may not do that for me. In regards to this, what am I on? Rational, volitional circle and the choices that we make. Can you think of any choices that you made in regards to your deep longings that were wrong? When I wanted this house so badly, I used to spend hours house hunting, getting in my car, and it's fun, and I enjoyed it, but it really wasn't the best use of my time. And then what it did, you know, it just got me more and more into that mode of thinking, the prettier the house, you know, the more you want it. It's just like, I have an objective to stay out of the shopping malls. If I don't see it, I don't want it. You know, I don't need to live at Coronado and Dillard's or wherever. And so I made some choices out here in my choice circle when I wanted this house so badly that weren't right.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
How would that apply to my problem? I mean, you got to cook.
I know, but you don't have to eat it. See, you choose to eat it. It's hard, dear. I'm not...
I really believe that it was psychological, and I remember days when we had nothing to eat. And when I have something to eat, it's heaven. And I don't eat a lot. I do have a weight problem.
Do you exercise?
Yeah. But yeah. What I'm saying is, I get such a joy out of a dry piece of bread, because I remember when there wasn't any.
There wasn't any.
And I
yes.
have to overcome that.
Yes.
There will always be some.
So I wonder if part of your personal... worth you're trying to meet by food.
I don't know. Maybe I'll find out.
Yeah, by because I've done that. I have a pattern. I get hungry about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I realized that happens to me because that's when this hyperactive son comes home from school, and it's stress, and I'm tired then, and I don't have much resistance. But I could go without breakfast and lunch.
You too?
I'd be fine. But from 4 o'clock on, I'm ravenous. So when I figured that out, I could work on it. I could say, okay, Lord, now here comes Christopher. And I want you to be in control of this thing. I don't want the potato chips and whatever controlling me. I want to be in control of it. And it has helped just to be aware and to know that, well, maybe I could have one thing at 4 o'clock and just wait till dinner. But it's not an easy battle. But I think it's choices. It's choosing to eat the right things and to leave some of the things that we really don't need. It's not easy. It's really difficult. Really difficult.
You can stay out of Coronado, but you have to stay in your kitchen. That's
right.
What I was trying to say.
Yeah, and I have two teenagers that I feed, and, you know, you do have to cook. Yeah. But you might, you know, spend some time with the Lord and ask him what is happening here in your personal circle.
I think I've done that many times, but I don't think I've learned to really listen properly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You can say, Lord, help me, show me, and then you close your ears and think, I don't really want to hear. I believe that's true in my case. I'm just now realizing that.
I think something that else that has helped me is Titus 2. That first part of that chapter, he's talking to the elders and what the requirements are for men in leadership in the church, and one of them is self-control, that they are to be moderate in food and drink.
Oh, yeah, I know that one well.
And then the first word that he says to the women is likewise, and then that we are to be good keepers at home, and to the older women are to teach the younger women. I feel, by the way, feel like you should be up here teaching me. Yes. Feel like we're being a little unscriptural here. But that has helped my motive. I don't want to lose weight to look better or to be accepted, or so I can wear nicer clothes. You know, if I can keep my motive, I want to do this because the Lord has said it's right. It's self-control. And that, you know, I haven't won the battle, but I keep hacking away at it. So I don't know if those thoughts are helpful. But
thank you.
You know, this has helped me a lot too, just to, because sometimes I will feel empty and I try to fill it up by eating, and eating does make you feel better. You know, it gives you energy, and it physically makes me feel better. And that's been a struggle, too, so I don't know if that will help, but I hope so. Okay, we'll keep going and see what happens. So anyway, I made some wrong choices out here in my volitional circle with time. Got all wrapped up in wanting this house. The next circle is, the last one, is an emotional circle. Your feelings. I think as women, we're real prone to live by how we feel, probably more so than men. We may be a little more in touch with our emotions than the men. I grew up on a ranch in the middle of South Dakota, 35 miles out in the country from a town of 900 people. And there are not even trees there. The only thing that's there is cattle, very few people. And my dad is kind of like John Wayne. He just didn't say anything that didn't need to be said. Phillips, South Dakota. It's about 50 degrees below in the wintertime. It was a 70-mile trip to get a loaf of bread or ball of string or whatever. And the Lord just kind of picked me up, took me out. But I grew up in a very non-emotional sort of home. And in the whole community was like that. You talked about the weather and the price of cattle, but you didn't talk about how you felt about anything. And when we went to Argentina, I was 27 years old, and I gave my dad the first hug that I can ever remember. And to this day, bless his heart, he will stand kind of back, and he waits for me to come and hug him. But he has never initiated. And it's not that he doesn't love me. He just doesn't have it. So it's... For me to be in touch with my feelings has really been a lot of work because I did not grow up being in touch with my feelings. It just was never there. My mom had a nervous breakdown when my little sister was born, and so my dad has kept her in this cocoon all her life, protecting her. I think probably 40 years ago they maybe didn't know much about mental health. I don't know. And
she's still...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's a wild little thing. She's got red hair and bright blue eyes and just... Totally. Yeah. She's doing fine, but he's protected her to the point that she doesn't deal with reality. She has never in her life written down the number of the check in the checkbook, who it was to, or how much it was from, how much it was for. You know, that's just, he just knows you got to keep enough money in there to let Mama do her thing, and he never says a word to her. She's so protected. And so I grew up in this peaceful, protected sort of situation. So I've really had to work at figuring out, now, what am I feeling? Where am I? Because I always just kind of happily went along my merry little way.
I would never have guessed that.
Oh, thank you, dear. Well, the Lord is, he keeps working on me. That's for sure. So I've had to work at that, figuring out how I feel and where I'm at. You might want to write this down. This is not in your notes either. This is called the ABC Theory of Emotions. A is your event. B will call evaluation. And C will call emotion. Now you might say, my parents got a divorce, which... They didn't. My parents haven't gotten a divorce. But anyway, a lot of people will say, my parents have gotten a divorce, and so therefore I'm bitter. I'm feeling bitter. And what's really happened is their parents got a divorce. They didn't evaluate it in the light of God's word. He has promised us that everything, he will work for good in our life. And that's the reason they've become bitter, because they haven't evaluated it right. You might see your husband driving down the street with a gorgeous blonde in his car. Well, you can evaluate that a lot of different ways. And it depends on what kind of, how your feelings will be according to how you evaluate it. If you evaluate it according to God's word, then he's promised us joy and peace and contentment. You know, maybe the girl had a flat tire and your husband's giving her a ride to the filling station. You don't know. But, you know, we wouldn't think that. We'd think, oh, look, he's got a gorgeous blonde in the car. What's he doing? And we'd go home and it'd be a war, you know. Usually. But it's not the event that causes our feeling. It's the way we evaluate it. And that's an interesting thought to me.
So Proverbs
how we go through
but how we go through it. That's right. There are three things that we can do with our feelings. We can stuff them down inside of us, we can dump them all over someone else, or we can acknowledge them. And to acknowledge them means to let myself feel what I'm feeling, which is still difficult for me because of the way I grew up. Dumping, like Irma talked about this morning, the man who came home and dumped on his wife that he was having an affair, well, he felt wonderful, but that didn't minister to his wife. And there are things that, you know, we shouldn't even tell our husbands because they don't minister. Things that they don't need to know, and they don't minister to our husbands. And I'm prone sometimes to think I have to tell him everything, and I really don't. There are things that he doesn't need to know. They don't help him. And my feelings out here are the key to these other three circles. When I am not feeling joyful, peaceful, and contented, then I know that I have made a wrong choice somewhere because my thinking has not been scriptural. And in that area of my life, at that moment, Jesus is not really my security and significance. See, over this house thing, I was feeling very frustrated. And I was angry because my goal was I wanted that new house that somebody said I could have, and I wasn't getting it. So I knew that something was wrong because I wasn't feeling what Jesus had promised me in the Word. So eventually we sold our big house. We moved to a rental house, which was not a very nice, clean little house. It was just not very nice, and I didn't like it. And we were there 4 months, and then we found the house that we're in now. Well, I didn't want to buy this house that we're in now. Pride. It just wasn't quite what I wanted. You know, I was just being nasty about the whole thing. I didn't like the carpet. And didn't like, wasn't, this room wasn't big enough, and this and that. And here again, you know, Jesus was not what he should have been. I was getting, the house was too important. And so I knew that when Larry said, we're going to buy this house that I didn't particularly want to buy, then I knew that I had to start working my way back out through these circles in order to have the emotions that Jesus had promised me. I had to start thinking, our realtor said to buy it, and I needed to submit to my authority, and as far as the house was concerned, he was the authority. He was a good realtor, and it was a good house. It was an excellent price. And so I had to change my thinking here that, you know, Jesus is my security and significance, not whether or not the carpet is the color I like and all these other fussy little things. And I had to choose, and I said to, I wasn't feeling like I wanted to buy that house, but I said to Larry, yeah, that's fine if we buy the house. I trust your judgment, and I trust our realtor, and so let's go ahead and do it. And now my emotions are that I love that house. It's just perfect. It's exactly what we prayed for. It's the right size, it's the right price, and I can keep it. It's not a monster. We've had really big homes before, and I'm getting too old to clean 5 or 6 bedrooms and all those big things. And so, you know, it works if you can work your way in and out of the circles. But your emotions are really important to figuring out where you are if something's wrong in this middle circle.
Want to ask something? Is that you have to sometimes walk back and forth those circles in order to find your...
Yes. And sometimes, you know, you won't have problems in every circle. You'll be more spiritual than I was. But you'll have maybe just a thinking problem. You're not thinking according to Scripture. But it's been really helpful to me. And then I think that this, you know, the ideal image that we have of ourselves and people have of us, and then reality over here of what we really are, will be closer and closer together as we grow in these areas of our self-worth. Can you think of any feelings that you had in regards to your longing, your deep longing, or your thinking, or did you have any negative feelings? Is it all making, is it kind of making sense? Okay, 1 Kings 19. Do you all know this story of what happened with Elijah? Well, let me read it because then it will come out on the tape. Elijah and Ahab and Jezebel. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Jezebel sent a message to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as one of them by tomorrow about this time." She was saying she was going to kill him, wasn't she? He was afraid. That was the emotion he was feeling. He arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. He himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, came and sat down under a juniper tree and requested for himself that he might die, and said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's." He lay down and slept under a juniper tree, and behold, there was an angel touching him, and he said to him, "Arise and eat." He looked, and there at his head was a bread cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, "Arise and eat, because the journey is too great." So he arose, ate and drank, and went in the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights to the mountains of God. There he came to a cave, and he lodged there, and the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken the covenant, torn down the altar, killed the prophets with the sword, and I alone am left." I think he was having a little pity party there. "Poor me, I'm all alone. They seek my life to take it away." He said, "Go forth, stand on the mountain before the Lord," and behold, the Lord was passing by. And a great strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind, and after the wind an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire, and after the fire a sound of a gentle blowing. It came about when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And behold, a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken the covenant, torn down the altars, killed the prophets with the sword, and I alone am left. They seek my life to take it away." And the Lord said to him, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you have arrived, you shall anoint Hazael king over Aram, and Jehu the son of Nimshi you shall anoint king over Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphat and hard name you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall come about, the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael, Jehu, shall put to death, and the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha, shall put to death. But I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." So he departed from there and found Elisha while he was plowing, and 12 pairs of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed over to him and threw his mantle on him. After he left the oxen and ran to Elijah and said, "Please let me kiss my father and mother, then I will follow you." And he said, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" So he returned from following him and took the pair of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the implements of oxen and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and followed Elijah and ministered to him. What was the greatest, what was the victory that they had just experienced with the prophets of Baal?
Wasn't that when they had soaked the altar?
Mm-hmm. They had soaked the altar, and the Lord had... God answered with fire. So they just had a wonderful victory, hadn't they? What was he fearful of? What was Elijah afraid of?
To be killed.
He was afraid he was going to be killed. Was that a realistic fear?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it was too. So he was feeling fear out here in his emotional circle, wasn't he? What was his response to that emotion or to that threat? What did he? What choice did he make?
He ran. He went to hide.
He ran. He went to hide, didn't he? He was saying, "God probably won't protect me." And what do you think he might have been thinking? Why did he run and hide? What do you think was up going on up here?
Why is God letting this happen to me?
Mm-hmm. All right. Why is God letting this happen? Or maybe God's not going to protect me like he said he would. He was not thinking according to what God had told him. And what do you think his personal circle was filled with? Was it filled with trust and with the Lord? What do you think was in there? I think it was probably self-pity. He was feeling real sorry for himself. And then what happened? The Lord sent an angel and ministered to him, didn't he? He was probably physically worn out, just tired. And he got that straightened out, and then what happened? He got himself rested, and the Lord came to him himself, didn't he? So in other words, he probably got some time with the Lord in here, and the Lord became his focus again. He was getting his personal circle straightened out. And then his thinking changed, and he obeyed, didn't he? He made the right choice, and then he was ministering. He was back doing what he was supposed to be doing. So it's fun to take the scriptures and take these little circles and see if you can work people in and out of them and their feelings. It's a new way, I guess, of looking at things. For me, it was a new way of looking at the scripture and how people were feeling and what choices they made. You can do it with Peter, you know, when he denied Jesus 3 times, what choice he made and how he felt. You might ask yourself, what are the facts if you're struggling with something? Is my emotional response realistic? Am I expecting too much of myself? Am I emotionally or physically exhausted? Am I expecting some huge emotional revelation from God? He often speaks, you know, in a still, quiet, small way. And have I spent time with the Lord in His presence? Do I know what He wants me to do?